Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey guys, welcome back to Soul Sisters. I think that I'm Jessie Katz, but I kind of don't know who I am anymore in this post-Grammy world.
I think I'm Dara Golub. I think I do know that. I didn't have an all-nighter, couple all-nighters for Grammy life.
Yeah, life has been pretty intense at Billboard. Yeah. We did a 2.5-hour live stream pre-show leading up to the ceremony on Sunday.
It was very well done.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I saw you tweeted a nice little tweet about it.
Yeah, because I turned it on just to like support and check it out, but then I was pretty hooked.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had amazing panelists on, like our smartest editors here at Billboard and Vibe, kind of giving their predictions and their hot takes on the year. And our Billboard News hosts, Kevin and Chelsea, were both here. Chelsea was in from LA, which was fun. And
nice throwing it to the red carpet.
Through to the red carpet. Keith and Desiree were there talking to all the stars. And we were all really happy with how it turned out. We were happier with our show than the actual show. when Bruno won those big categories at the end, we were all kind of crying.
That was amazing, huh?
Amazing,
crazy.
Yeah.
Like
surprising. Our editors didn't guess correctly all the way through. No one saw that coming. I don't know. People love Bruno Mars, so I'm happy for people who are happy about it, but it was
Well, what are their reactions now? I mean, is there a way to even understand things, or is it just, you know, we'll never know?
I don't know. You know, it's like, then you start saying, well, what is the Recording Academy and who's voting and who gives a shit? Let's just move on. Let's all just enjoy the music that we enjoy. It's all good. The thing that we're kind of all on board with right now is this thing that Neil Portnow said, which hopefully he was just so tired and this came out wrong, but the quote is terrible, that women need to step up in order to be recognized more at the Grammys. What? Yeah. So that was a tough one. You know, we talk to women in here nearly every day and they're stepping up. They've stepped up and they've been stepping up since the beginning of time.
Right.
So that's everyone else needs to step up now because we're here. We're waiting for the rest of the world to catch up. Anyway.
Yeah.
But yes, today's episode is with Brandi Clark, who is no stranger to Grammy nominations. She has a bunch of them. She started being nominated when she was a songwriter writing for some of the biggest names in country music. And now she's an amazing artist, solo artist, singer as well, continuing to write awesome songs. And she's also an out and proud queer lady. And she doesn't... how do I say this? She doesn't talk a lot about her sexuality usually in press and stuff. She's kind of happy to just be out, and that's all that she kind of has to say about it. But she did indulge us in asking her a little bit more about what that's like being in the country space and what it would take for her to maybe get a little more political, respond a little bit more to what's happening in the White House, et cetera. And we had a really interesting chat about that. It was very... grateful that she was willing to go there with us. And also, just talked about how the hell she became such a prolific songwriter. She's one of those that just seems to have this golden touch. And she was just a really dope woman. I like this episode. Anything else to add, Dee?
You said it all.
Okay. Yeah. Well, now we'll let Brandi say the rest. Brandi Clark on Soul Sisters. Well, we're talking Grammys with someone who knows about the Grammys, Brandi Clark. Thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I kind of want to keep talking about this. We were just talking about how the Grammys are in New York this year for the first time in a long time. And yeah, we're curious to see if it feels any different for the people attending.
I think it'll feel way different for the people attending. Now, yeah, the people watching it won't feel any different, I don't think.
Right.
But I was saying before we were on camera,
yeah,
that I've only been going to the Grammys for the last 5 or 6 years, and I live in Nashville, and it's always cold this time of year, and the Grammys to me are that time when you get to go to LA and it's nice and
totally,
get a little sun and a little warm.
I know, so all the East Coasters this year are like, what the hell?
Right.
Like, you know, a lot of our colleagues usually get to fly out to LA for a week and have a nice little vacation right after the holidays, but not this year.
Yeah, but it is special since it's, I heard that the first Grammys were held in New York, and since it's the 60th, that's why they're having them here.
That's good Grammy trivia, Brandi.
I don't know. I could be wrong on that trivia.
I love that.
This could be that game where you make, what is that, where you make up things?
Oh, yeah,
you
try to get, what's like Balderdash.
Balderdash, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I would win
Grammy
that
Balderdash.
Right,
yeah. I like it. Yeah. We've been looking for games to work into our live stream, so maybe
we
should use that one. I'm going to bring this to the creative meeting after this. Yeah.
You know a great game, a great Grammy
trivia.
Trivia, yes, thank you. Would be artists that haven't won Grammys, because
that you think of course would have.
Most nominated artists who haven't won. Because I looked that. I don't know why I looked that up a couple of years ago, but I did, and it's astonishing.
Yeah. That, yeah.
Like Katy Perry, I want to say nominated maybe 16 times.
Has never won.
Wow. Yeah, something crazy like that.
Right. I wonder who has the most nominations with no wins.
Yeah.
It might be her.
Yeah.
For some reason, her name strikes me as near the top of the list. Yeah. At the top, yeah.
She's like the, who is it? The soap opera actress?
Susan Lucci.
Thank you. Yes. Susan Lucci.
So nominated
music.
And never won?
Yeah.
She finally did.
Yeah, but she had like this crazy streak of just years and years and years and years. Anyway, so you're not attending the Grammys this year. You have a break.
Yeah.
You've also had a nice streak.
Yeah.
Of being nominated and going and doing all the things.
Oh, it's so fun, you know, and it's always a big honor to be nominated. I've been nominated several times. I hope I'm nominated again, and hopefully I'll win one day. But
you seem to have pretty good luck with it. So
I feel fortunate that the Grammy Grammy voting consensus seems to like what I do. And
yeah, and it's almost like the second you decided to strike out as an artist, not just a songwriter, they were like, okay, Grammy nominations.
You had Grammy noms for your songwriting
also for
as
songwriting.
Well.
I did, yeah.
But there seemed to be no rough transition.
No, I know. I've been very fortunate in that way. I was nominated as a songwriter for Mama's Broken Heart.
Right.
I have to admit, I mean, I always watched the Grammys.
Uh-huh.
But that was a world I didn't know much about the way I did about, like, the CMAs, like the Country Music Association.
Okay.
And, but I definitely, not that I haven't been shown love from the CMAs, but the Grammys decided, you know, I was their girl, and that was really nice, because I had that first nomination, and then I remember being out there that year, and wow, this is so great, and you know, all of music, not just country music, and I remember someone saying, well, you'll be nominated next year, too. And I said, oh, well, I hope so. Well, no, because your record will be nominated. You know, because I was just like, oh, wow. Because at the time, I had just released 12 Stories. It was on an independent label.
Right.
It was getting a lot of good press, but I didn't think it would be nominated for a Grammy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, boom, and then I was nominated for Best New Artist that same year.
Right.
And yeah, I definitely felt like, wow, these Grammy people like me. Who are they? I
want to
send them
shake
some
their hands.
Whiskey for Christmas or something.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. That's better than a handshake.
Yeah.
Was it funny when you were nominated for Best New Artist, and I'm assuming doing tons of press on that, I'm sure that people were addressing you as if you were new on the scene often, but you actually were a veteran already by then?
Yeah. You know, I've been new several times.
Yeah.
Reborn.
Yeah, I guess
that's a gift.
I guess that is a gift, you know, because, yeah, I was a songwriter for years, and you know, it took me, you know, over a decade to have a hit as a songwriter, like it does most people.
Right.
And then I had given up on the idea of being an artist on any sort of a major level because, you know, I just thought, well, that chance has passed me by, and if it didn't happen, it's not going to happen.
But that was the original goal.
Totally. Yeah. You know, and I honestly think most, I don't know what it's like in LA or New York, but most songwriters in Nashville moved to Nashville to be artists.
Mm-hmm. Oh, would you say?
Yeah, I would say the majority.
But it's also a place where songwriters go. Like, if you want to be a songwriter,
yeah,
that's the place.
I think what happens a lot is a lot. I mean, I can tell you most of the people that I write with that are professional songwriters, they wanted to be artists at some point, or mm-hmm. were, you know, were on a label and right. it just didn't work out. Or I think what happens a lot of times is, you know, if you're an artist, I think you have a real identity in what you want to say. And a lot of really great songwriters and great singers oftentimes get record deals and make a record where there's 10 different artists because right. they're such a versatile songwriter uh-huh. and can't really have they don't really have a real strong single point of view. And a lot of times those people, their artist career doesn't work out, but they end up being the most successful songwriters,
yeah.
you know,
because the
versatility really helps in that field. And so I was doing that for you know a long time, and then a management company heard some of my demos mm-hmm. and approached me about would I want to work with them, would I want to make a record. And at first I kind of thought somebody was pulling my leg, but they weren't, and so that was how 12 Stories happened.
Okay.
Does being a songwriter and with the idea that you're going to give these songs over to a different artist allow you to write about topics and tackle things that may be less personal and not have to worry about it being such an intimate thing, a revealing thing of yourself? Whereas when you're working as your own artist and putting your own stuff together, you feel like you have to mind something a little bit more vulnerable or something?
That's a great question. You know, it's always been one and the same for me. Unless I'm
I was going to say, I would answer no for you yeah. because you sing a lot of songs that sound like they're stories of other people.
I always go back to my philosophy on songwriting is it comes down to one line in a song. Mm. And it was a Johnny Cash song. And he said, I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. I always tell people, Johnny Cash did not shoot a man in Reno. Because there are people and there are artists. I remember when I was working as a staff songwriter trying to get other people to cut my songs. They wouldn't cut a song if they hadn't lived it, and that would frustrate me. Because I think great art is dramatic.
Yeah.
And it is real life, but sometimes it's I mean every song I've written that has risen up mm-hmm. that people have paid attention to, there was some grain of truth in it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's my grain of truth, sometimes it's someone else's, but there's always a grain of truth, I think, for me, in anything that does well. And by does well, I mean just resonates with people, you
sure.
know. And so for me, it is one and the same. I do think there are writers who are really good at like so-and-so's making a record next week and they can write for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've never been good at that. I've always done best to just try to write the best song. And I feel like if it doesn't move me, it's not going to move anyone else. And if it does move me, it might move 2 million other people. You know, that's just mm-hmm. kind of the way it works for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you do a lot of things well. You can tell very specific stories about specific characters, like it's a short story,
yep.
you know. You Thank also you. Have these lines like, you stay just long enough to leave me again, which kills me. Mm-hmm. That is like such a universal feeling that you have just found
distilled
the exact
in such a concise. Like,
yeah.
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 Oh, thank you.
So I feel like you definitely, you can straddle both sides of that. You know, you can like dream up a character and paint their life. And it's a very specific thing and it's still relatable, but it's like a very kind of unique picture that you're painting. And then you can be just totally, just emotionally universal. You
yeah.
know? Yeah.
Well, I think for me, and that was from the song, You Can Come Over,
yeah.
correct?
Yeah.
That I wrote that song with, Mark Narmer and Jesse Joe Dillon. And that actually came to me, Jesse Joe, who I write with a lot,
uh-huh.
her and her boyfriend had broken up and she said to me, you know, I don't want to be there when he comes and gets his stuff. And she had broken up with him. It wasn't like I mean, it was hurtful to her, but
yeah.
she wasn't the one hanging on.
Right.
She said, because I know that he's going to come in and he's going to smoke. And if he smokes, then, you know, like it was this whole chain of things. And so I think for me, and, you know, I wasn't the only person writing that song, but what helped me in that song and what always helps me in songs is to imagine the furniture.
Mm.
So I had Jesse Joe's apartment in my head when we were writing that. And I think, you know, a lot of times for me with a song, it takes place in a kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a lot of life is lived in a kitchen, you
yeah.
know. So if I can picture that kitchen or that hotel room or wherever it is, then I can get inside those characters in, you know, it, because I also think people aren't all that different. You know, whether it's race or religion or the neighborhood you live in, we're all the same when you break us down to our hearts. But if I can picture those other, the furniture.
That's so interesting. I was going to ask about if you had like tips or tricks to get in the right place, to get a story going, get a song going, because that for, you know, different artists experience it differently. That's really the magic of it, is like coming up with the song. And when it's somewhat of a job in a way that it, you know, was for you and you were more just songwriting. I wonder if you had developed a way of just getting there, you know, like, okay, I need to sit down and I need to do it. But being so specific about having the image in your head of a place and the furniture, that's a great,
yeah. Well, and I think too, what's always helped me is I go about songwriting pretty disciplined. And it's a little harder, well, it's a lot harder being on the road. But I, even in that, I try to like, okay, I'm going to spend an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours if it's in the day to just write and sit down and make myself write. Now, early on when I was a staff songwriter, you know, I would come in and treat it like it was a punch in, punch out sort of job. And there are good and bad things to that. I mean, the good thing is you really do get that discipline. You know, the bad thing I think is sometimes in doing that, you are just writing songs, and the world doesn't really need more songs. It needs more great songs, know? And so what I started to do after I learned how to write songs, and I'm still learning how to write songs. I don't want to sound like I have figured it out. That's part of the draw of writing songs, is there is no figuring it out.
Yeah.
But I try to find ideas and characters that inspire me. You know, so if if I don't have that great idea and I'm not sitting down with someone else who might have a great idea, you know, I'll make myself go to the library and read and do things, or drive around and listen to music or listen to podcasts. And, you know, language tends to spark ideas for me. But, you know, that's how I would get into it. And I want to care about my characters. If I care about them, and I love a flawed character, you know. I saw years ago, I remember Showtime, the network. They were creating their network around shows that had a centrally flawed character. And I thought, that is so amazing. Because we're all flawed characters. And so to me, it's like painting that picture, painting it real, like where it's not all glossy, but where you can sympathize with somebody that's in a tough spot.
And country music in general is big on in the details of a person and where they are and what the room looks like and things like that. I think that's it really puts you in it.
Do you have to be intentional about keeping people in your life or observing people that are material for your songs as you become more and more successful?
Like keeping them out, like personal life stuff?
No, I mean like if you're like writing about a waitress, for example, you know, not that you don't encounter waitresses anymore, but I just mean to like to really be in a lived in life where you're encountering people from all walks of life so that you can be able to write about them. Do you have to be more intentional about that? So you're not just, because I imagine it would be easy to kind of be in a bubble.
Would you write about us?
Well, I'm really,
like,
you know,
this is your experience. Yeah. Like, you mean this, your experience is changing?
I just mean like the more successful you become, the more kind of isolated sometimes you can get from things that you would like to write about.
Right. I get that. I don't run into that. Yeah. I mean, I have some crazy friends.
Okay.
You know, and a lot of them have been really like
keeping it real for you.
Yeah. I mean, and I've got my own kind of crazy too.
I hope you're living your life too.
But I have friends that I've had forever.
Yeah.
And I draw a lot on them, and they kind of like it. You know, they kind of revel in it.
Being
like
immortalized.
My best friend, I've written a lot of songs that were inspired by her family.
Okay.
And they're from Florida. And, you know, I think Florida is the craziest state in the nation. And I love Florida.
Like,
there's no but.
It contains so many contradictions. Yes. It's fascinating. Yeah.
And so I never get too far from that. Uh-huh. And I am so drawn to characters. I'm really fortunate in that I've always had a diverse group of friends around me. Mm-hmm. You know, some people are just friends with people in the music business.
Right.
And that'd be the same if they were working in the car business. You know, they just right. are friends yeah. with the people that they directly
Workplace.
Work with. Yeah.
Yeah.
Most of my friends aren't in it. I mean, a few are, but.
Does that mean they're old friends or? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Old friends. And even the newer friends I make, you know?
Uh-huh.
So, you know, a real corner turner for me, uh-huh. honestly, was when I used to write songs. I think it's real easy when you're in a community that's really tight, like the songwriting community, and where everybody is like living for songs and trying to write better songs.
Yeah.
And for a long time, I wrote songs and I realized trying to impress other songwriters mm-hmm. and publishers. And one day I was driving in to write songs and I went through the bank and the girl that was helping me, the teller, I thought, man, I wonder what she would write if she were a songwriter.
Mm.
And that really changed things for me. And I started to look, instead of trying to impress other songwriters, trying to write something that someone who isn't a songwriter would say. And that they can hear.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know, because I'm playing the City Winery tonight. Most of the people that are going to be there mm-hmm. aren't songwriters.
Right.
You know, they're just looking for an escape.
Uh-huh.
Or to feel a little less alone in whatever it is they're going through.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's my job as a songwriter and artist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love that. Did you move to Nashville for school? Is that what brought
well,
you there?
Well, I moved to Nashville for the music business.
Okay.
But I really had it in my head that I needed to finish college because
uh-huh.
I had put so much into it. And so I did. I finished
college.
So
you started
college
somewhere else?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was, you know, I was 2-3 years into college when mm-hmm. I moved. I had to go another 3 years because, you know, when you start transferring around,
yeah.
and I was on a quarter system and then went to a semester yeah. system and lost a lot of credits. But I always said, you know, it's the one thing that can't be repossessed.
Yeah, exactly. Know? Exactly. Yeah. I mean, in Belmont, seems like, of course you would have studied at Belmont.
Yeah. Not
the
that
home of great songwriting.
It is. And, you know, crazy enough, I found Belmont through, there was this TV show on TNN years ago, and it was Crook and Chase.
Uh-huh.
And Trisha Yearwood was on there, and she said she had gone to Belmont, and I thought, well, then I've got to
wow.
go to Belmont.
Have you gotten to tell her that?
No, I. You know what? I've met
her.
I should tell
her
that. But
she changed the course of your life.
Yeah, because I think I thought, oh, I can go to college and do this.
Yeah.
And it was real intriguing to me to go to a university that had a music business program.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And fun fact here.
Yeah.
I tried to get into the music department, and uh-huh. I was denied twice.
Really?
Yeah. Into the.
Don't you love that now?
Yeah.
It's like sweet revenge.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, don't you ask me to come speak to that music department? No, I'm
That's
just kidding.
So funny.
No, it was a good motivator.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
You
yeah.
know, and
yeah.
it also made me major in music business, which was probably more helpful to me
yeah.
than a music degree would have been. And I took music classes and, mm-hmm. and, you know, have a pretty good knowledge of music. But, you know, songwriting, I think is so, I mean, I learned a lot from the few things I took. Courses and seminars
uh-huh.
but it's an instinct thing
yeah.
you know, and it is figuring out your own way. And
yeah, yeah.
Was there much in the music business education part that you would say like still pertains today?
Does any of it carry
does, well, yeah
I don't, you know, I mean, I guess get a lawyer
yeah.
you know
right.
you learn that, like get a lawyer
yeah.
I remember I had to take music management course
uh-huh.
and my emphasis was actually in music management, and I remember our teacher saying, this is a record contract. In the first page they'll tell you what they're going to give you, in the next 250 pages they're going to tell you how they're going to take it away.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, I think more than anything I just got to be around like-minded people
mm-hmm,
who
yeah.
wanted to do the same thing, and you know, more than anything, I think college, unless you end up being a doctor or a lawyer or something that really requires the knowledge you get there, I think you learn, you know, tolerance for people that you didn't grow up around.
Because mm-hmm.
I grew up in a really small town and everybody was kind of like me. And, you know, I went to college and you're getting people from everywhere. And it proves to a potential employer that you can stick with something. Mm-hmm. I was going to say for 4 years, in my case, six.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Right?
Yeah.
How are you feeling about the music industry right now? Are you feeling comfortable? Are you scared?
Well, you know, it is a scary time with streaming and figuring out how songwriters are going to get paid.
Yeah. Does that give you more motivation to go on the road like you're doing this year?
Yeah. I mean, I feel differently about streaming. I mean, I can argue both sides of it.
Yeah. Right.
Because as a songwriter, you know, somebody's stealing from us.
Right.
Now, as an artist, you see the places where you stream the most. Mm. You sell the most tickets. You know, it's a good tool for artists. And I also try to look at it. I mean, I love Netflix, you know, and I think about I resisted even looking at Spotify for a long time. And then one night I was actually out doing a radio tour and we were driving back to Nashville really late. And and the radio rep said to me, "Hey, could you play DJ on my phone and keep me awake?" And he handed it to me and it was Spotify.
And you're like, oh, here we
go. I'd never seen it. And
why were you so resistant to even using it?
Because as a songwriter, it was the devil. Mm-hmm. You know, because you just don't get paid what, you know, a song will stream. I mean, I'm going to get this wrong, but, you know, 20 million times and a songwriter will make pennies off of it. Whereas on radio play, terrestrial radio play, you know, you get something that's played that much, you're making a lot more money.
Yeah.
Contrary to popular belief, most songwriters aren't living in mansions. You know,
right.
they're just like trying to support their family,
yeah.
doing something they love and working really hard at it.
Mm.
You know, it's not, you know, most of them aren't sleeping in till noon and just writing when the inspiration hits them. So I had resisted it for that reason. But he handed me his phone and I started going through things and it would take me to something like, oh, if you like this, you might like that. And I thought, wow, if I were just a consumer...
Yeah.
The way I am when I watch my television and movies,
right?
I would never probably purchase anything again.
Right.
And so to me, it's just about figuring out how to get people paid fairly.
Totally. Right.
And do you have a different experience as an artist now too?
Yeah. I mean, as an artist, you know, you want to be on those playlists and definitely it helps expose your music. And like I said, you know, they broke down. When I was working my last single, they broke down the places in the country that had streamed me the most. Mm. And those were the places where I sold tickets the fastest.
Yeah. Were they the places that you expected?
Some of them, you know.
What were the surprises?
Sorry. Well, I mean, I do well in the cities.
Okay.
Which kind of surprised me because I think of myself as being very country.
Uh-huh.
but I do well like New York, Chicago, Houston, Atlanta, you know, the cities, that was surprising to me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, I mean, what does that mean? It means that you appeal to city and country, right?
Well, you know, I think it means, what I've been told it means is that that my music is a little smart. Maybe too smart. And I'm not going to say too smart for the country because I grew up in the country. Way in the country.
Right.
And I don't think people in the city are smarter than people in the country.
Right.
So that's a tough one for me to...
You're not quite on board with that analysis.
You know, maybe I definitely resonate with like an NPR crowd.
Yeah. It's not, you know, there's country and then there's sort of country rock.
Somebody said to me a long time ago, and this kills me because I have so many drinking songs, like there's drinking man's music and there's thinking man's music. You are thinking man's music. And so
yeah, thinking man's music, that's about drinking sometimes.
Right, exactly.
And I do, you know, I think maybe people in the city, and I'll say this about when I tour over in the UK and Europe, people who like to seek out music tend to find me.
Yeah, I like that.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST.
burrow.com/ACAST.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I want to ask you about something interesting that you have said, because I was wondering this about you, and then I found you addressed this in an interview, but I'm a little incredulous about it. So you said that, I'm paraphrasing, you've never really felt pushback from the country audience for being an out artist.
Mm-hmm.
That's really true. And if that's true, is that because you're selective about like reading comments from fans or people on the internet, or is that because you're like insulating yourself a little bit, or you really think things have changed that much?
Well, you know, some of it's probably the other artists I've toured with.
Okay.
You know, but I've never felt that. I really haven't.
Yeah.
I've never had anybody sling any hate at me that I know.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, I'm not online every day.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
I try to give myself a break from it, but I see it enough that would come at me, and I've had people hate on me for other things.
Yeah.
So I don't know, you know, I think I've been really lucky. I mean, to be out at this time,
mm-hmm.
you know, there are people who came before me that were, and it probably wasn't as easy.
Yeah.
Now I'm sure that there are probably people with prejudice towards me, but they don't come to my shows.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And maybe if I was like Dixie Chick status, maybe if I was,
you know, I was just thinking that. Yeah. Because you don't tend to be overtly political.
Right.
You know, in the way.
And like, when I said Dixie Chick status, I mean like playing Madison Square Garden.
Yeah. Oh, you know, got like, it. Like, I was thinking like Dixie Chicks coming out against George W. Bush.
Yeah.
And then the community was like, hang on a second.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, I tend to keep my politics to myself because I know I have so many fans, and I know a lot of my fans. Like I've been fortunate enough to meet a lot of people, and I'm lucky. I have great fans,
mm-hmm.
but I know that they don't all see things the same way I do, mm-hmm. and I don't want to alienate somebody by coming out real hard on something.
Do you think there would ever be a tipping point for you on that, though,
where
you feel like
political?
I just have to speak up about this?
Oh,
even if I do alienate some fans?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're getting there? Like the time might be
coming? You say it as if you have an idea of what.
Well, I would have a real hard time. You know, even though I don't like throw my sexuality in mm-hmm. people's faces, but if gay and lesbians started to become, if some of our rights were taken away or people were being real oppressed, I would definitely stand up.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't be quiet then.
Right.
And there's a difference in standing up as you are this artist, but versus putting it into the music,
mm-hmm.
where like people can come to your shows and know, and you could, your fans will know that they're just going to get this entertainment versus, you know, there's the whole public persona that comes along with this is an interesting thing to navigate as well, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, just personally, like just being open about who you are is huge. I feel like you've already done so much just by doing that. Just like live your life, and you know, and I understand people who aren't out, you know, mm-hmm. there's a million reasons for people still not to want to come out, you know,
mm-hmm.
but you know, you can choose to be as vocal or as specific about issues as you want, but you know, I think it's awesome that you have also just been like, well, this is who I am, and I'm also just going to sing my music now, you know?
Well, and I think for me, that was a timing thing, you know? By the time I had the opportunity to make a record, I was out of the closet, and
mm-hmm.
anybody who comes out of the closet does not go back in it.
Right.
It's a terrible place, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was just already known. And I was really fortunate that I had people around me, management, label,
mm-hmm.
that were just like, it's just about the music.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like, it doesn't, you know, your sexuality is a part of you, but your music stands on its own.
Yeah.
And so I've been really fortunate that way. And I also think that's probably part of why I haven't had a lot of backlash or hate slung at me.
Mm.
You know, I think sometimes, I mean,
it wasn't before you.
There wasn't a before
was
and after.
Right.
Yeah. And had it happened earlier for me,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was so scared. I probably would have done anything to seem like I was straight.
Mm.
And so then I think people get mad because they feel lied to. You know?
That is, yeah, that can be definitely part of the not being ready.
Right. Yeah. You know?
Does Nashville feel like an embracing, open-hearted, open-minded place in this way?
It does. But
it's a little bastion.
Once again, I've also kind of been in a bubble. My first publisher was gay. So okay. that was just like the norm. And you know, one of my great collaborators is Shane McAnally, who was very out of the closet. Mm-hmm. And when I met him, I was out of the closet, and we were just kind of these out of the closet people together. And so, you know, 5 years before that, it might have been different. Or had I had a publisher that was different than the one I had, you know, I've just always, but I think that's partly that's me.
Right.
Gravitating toward. I don't care to be around somebody who hates me for something I can't change or choose.
You have some self-respect. I think that's healthy.
I have I don't want it. Look, I mean, there are certain opinions I can't change, and people are totally, it's fine for people to have their opinion, but I'm not going
to. You don't need to be around it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amen to that.
Yeah.
You are going to be playing, I think, some this year with one of my personal little heroes, which is Maggie Rose. She was one of the first guests we ever had on this show.
Was
actually.
She really?
Yeah. And she I remember she just told such an inspiring story about all the crap that she went through when she first went down to Nashville and trying to find herself. And she's become a real awesome artist.
Oh, she's fabulous.
So I think that's a great pairing, you two.
Yeah, I'm excited for her to come out. And I've known her. I mean, I've never known her well, but I wrote with her and had a song on a record she did a couple of records back.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a great artist then, but she's really seemed to come into her own and really have found her own voice.
Yeah. So how many months are you going to be on tour now for?
A lot. I mean, I'm on tour more than I'm not, and I'm going to make a record this year. So I'll take some months off.
How do you do that?
Well, you know, I'm always writing.
Yeah.
And but I'll take a couple months off to actually make a record.
Okay.
You know, and I won't tour as much this year as I did last year.
Uh-huh.
But I like being on the road. It inspires me, and it reminds me of why we write songs.
Yeah.
You know, I had a show last night. It's the first show I've had in about 6 weeks.
Okay.
And it's like the reason why any of us do this, it's not to be in the studio, you know, it's not even to write those songs, 'cause that's hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's for that love you get back when you're on stage.
Yeah.
And you get that as a songwriter when you hear your song on the radio or when you go and see your song performed.
Yeah.
That's why we do it. And so for me, being out on the road, it reminds me of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
So that album will be coming out next year or this year?
I don't know. I mean, I would guess late this year or early next year. And look, cool. that's in my perfect world. You know, labels always have schedules. And,
right.
You know, they put you in where they can put you in. But I'll be making a record this year.
Okay.
I'm real confident in that.
That's exciting. Are all those songs written?
I don't know yet.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I feel like for me, I always find a centerpiece and then build around it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, like, there were songs on Big Day in a Small Town that were written before 12 Stories, but they just didn't fit with the theme of 12 Stories.
Right.
So for me, you know, you get a song and you don't even necessarily know it's the centerpiece at first, but it just starts to stick.
Yeah.
And things start to stick to it.
Uh-huh.
And then you have this nucleus and you build around it.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have the centerpiece? Do you know?
I don't know yet.
Okay.
You know, I mean, some of them, like, I didn't know with 12 Stories what the centerpiece was.
Yeah.
And that also can change. You know, what you think. Going in, we felt like it was Pray to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it was done, I felt like it was Take a Little Pill.
Uh-huh.
And now I feel like it's Hold My Hand. You know?
It's an evolution.
Yeah. And with Big Day in a Small Town, the day that we wrote Big Day in a Small Town, I thought, oh, I want to make a record called Big Day in a Small Town.
Yeah.
You know?
That's good.
So sometimes it's that obvious.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, this is a different beast of a record for me because I have been on the road a lot. I feel like that I have less in the can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do feel like I'm writing more towards a record than I ever have. I still don't try to get in that mindset because I do best to just write great songs.
Yeah.
They're not all great, but to try
I'm
to
the best at writing great songs.
Yeah. I don't ever quote me say that. I try to write something great.
Yeah.
But I feel like, you know, with this record, it's going to come together differently. And I think that, you know, there might be more newer things on it than older things.
Okay.
And that's exciting and scary, yeah, at right. the same time. Because yeah. I always like to be able to live with something mm-hmm. a long time. But mm-hmm. I've been involved in records as a songwriter that were great, that were written, all of it written in a very short period of time. And when I look at my records, even though I had been writing for 12 Stories my whole life, not knowing yeah. it, the majority of those songs were written in a very short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like there becomes this synergy.
Yeah.
And
just ride that feeling.
Yeah. And I didn't even know it when it was going on. Uh-huh. But then when we sat down, those songs rose up. Uh-huh. And then there were things that were a lot older that ended up on the record.
Uh-huh.
But really, the majority of that was written in a short period of time.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, can't wait to hear whatever comes no. next. Yeah.
Oh, I'm excited. I'm excited to hear it.
Yeah, for sure. Excited to write it.
Yeah.
Right. Sing it here. Yeah. yeah. That's gonna cool. be. All right. Well, good luck with all the touring.
Oh, thank you. Thank you guys for sitting down with me.
No,
thank
of
you.
Course. This was an honor.
Yes.
Yeah. And enjoy not going to the Grammys this year.
Well, chill I mean, out. Look, it's not that I enjoy not going to the Grammys. I always wish I was nominated. Some years you just don't have a record in.
Yeah, I know that.
I mean, I think they should have made a special award for me, honestly.
Right?
A special nomination. But I hope to get back there and if I wasn't going to be playing in Boston that night, I'd probably figure out a reason to stay here and go.
Yeah.
I
think you might tune in.
Well, I'll be on stage.
You'll have time.
Yeah. I'm sure I'll record it.
I mean, the Grammys are super long this year, so it'll probably go longer than your show.
Longer than usual?
I think they added another half hour to it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you might be able to sneak in a little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's in, and I hate to admit this, but you know, you really want to go. And like yeah. last year, I was fortunate to be in like the fourth or fifth row.
Not too shabby.
Which is really nice. But I always end up leaving before it's over.
Why? Yes.
Well, because if you're not, most of the awards are handed out in the pre-tale.
Right.
And that starts at like noon.
Yeah. So, it's like 70 awards or yes. something that go out before.
I really
yeah.
think there's 83.
Yeah.
Oh, I think. Yeah. There I think it's 83. It's something crazy like that. But. You know, so if you're there by noon,
what?
And they have a red carpet for that too,
the red carpet is legit like 7 hours long. For yeah, the Grammys.
Really?
It's
well, now
crazy.
There are two different ones though.
Okay.
Now I've been on that big one.
Yeah.
When I've performed on the show,
uh-huh.
but there's also another smaller one for the well. Wait, no, maybe it's the
I
same
think
thing.
It might be the same.
I think
carpet.
You're. Don't listen to
it's
me.
Probably just fewer reporters yeah. on it in the first few hours.
So you're there. So you get there, and oh so God. You've been in hair and makeup for at least 2 hours before that. So by the time the actual show
no,
starts,
you're dead. You're done.
Yeah.
You've
like,
been
what?
In heels for a long time.
Yeah.
You're hungry.
And exactly.
You're punchy. Yeah.
So
I'd just be hangry. The
yeah. Totally.
So
yeah.
I always go and then try to get back to the room
yeah.
before the show starts. Cause on the West Coast,
such
when
a
they're
pro.
There, yeah.
We should do a whole video just Brandy's Grammy tips for how to survive.
Yeah,
yeah.
Can tell you a few.
Tips and trivia.
Yeah, I love yeah. that. All right. Well, thanks, Brandy. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
We'll hopefully see you again when there's a new album out. You can come
yes.
tell us about it.
I would love that.
All right, let's do that.
It'd be too easy to throw open that door and go where we've gone too many times. You stay just long enough to leave me again so you can come over. But you can't come in.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.